I'd like to call this second monthly meeting to order. Please stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So it is April 27th, 5:30, second monthly meeting. And on the agenda, we are looking at any changes to the regular agenda?
No changes, but just draw your attention. Probably have a fairly lengthy executive session to bring you up to date on some litigation matters, a real estate matter that we're undertaking. And then to further evaluate qualifications of applicants for public employment.
And no decisions will be made during the executive session. And a time estimate?
Probably an hour.
Okay, we'll go for 60 minutes. I'm going to be late for dinner.
I have my early.
No. Okay, so with that, do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move we approve the agenda. In a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Consent agenda. Everybody's had a chance to read through the consent agenda?
Yep, I move we approve the consent agenda. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Public comments not related to the agenda. All right. Moving right along. Going on to the second reading, we have no items for the second reading. We're up to part number 6, first reading. Part A, Fine Yacht Interiors Lease.
Sure. So, I think we all know who Quinlan Tracy is. So, the Fine Yacht Interiors is a really valued and long-time port tenant in the building, one of the former Sperry buildings shared with the Blue Cafe and with, I think, Design Craft is a sub-tenant. Downstairs. Essentially, what is proposed is a three-year lease with three-year potential extensions. We have folded in two additional storage units, kind of on the east end of the building. Within the lease, in all other material respects, it's basically our standard form lease. I will say that due to the activity within conducted by Gwendolyn under the terms of the lease, we have not included kind of the standard hazardous material rider that we do for other leases where the activity is involved, epoxy, resins, that kind of thing. So we're recommending that the lease be approved. I think it basically is an updated lease. It was under one of the old Sperry leases, which really bore no significant resemblance to kind of our standard form lease. So that's what we're employing in this instance.
So now this is a standard lease. This is the updated version.
Correct.
Now, when you said sublease, is she subleasing to the people below her? Or?
Right. She has sub-tenant.
Okay. So that's in the lease, right? That she can sublease?
That she can, and I think by approving this, we would be giving tacit approval to the arrangement that already exists.
Mm-hmm. But now, the sublease, I mean, Gwendolyn doesn't use epoxy or anything like that, but does the tenant that subleases from her have anything that could possibly fall under that hazardous materials rider?
My understanding is no, but again, the first reading, so we can certainly come back and confirm that.
That's a good policy thing. We probably need to ask that specific question, but also somehow reserve our authority and right to, you know, should subtenant get into a different line of business, you know, a year from now or something, and now they are producing something that could be hazardous, that we can require, you know, that agreement. And in this case, Gwendolyn should be held
correct
accountable too, even though it's a different business.
Right.
Now, I didn't really read through and find anything specifically talking about a sublease in there, because I didn't know about it until just now. Is there anything, language in it that talks about the fact that you
most of our leases allow subleasing pending court approval? You know, because it's got to meet, you know, the city zoning and that sort of thing. You can't rent a building in our marine trade zoning district and then try
around and sublet it to an auto repair person or something like that, so.
We can certainly come back to you with additional information prior to the May 9th meeting to kind of confirm the nature of the activity, including clarifying language within the lease as well.
Yeah, because my concern is that, you know, she could sublease it to the fellow that's not doing anything with hazardous materials now, but then he could go away and someone that makes, you know, yeah, rock fuel could go in there.
That's why I said we need to make it clear that we have the authority to go back in.
And in paragraph 19 as well, that's pretty self-explanatory first sentence. I mean, you have full control.
Yeah. Yeah, the difference in this instance is obviously that this subtenant is already in existence. So, you know, maybe what we should do is just clarify the understanding that this tenant is in the building with the court's express consent, with the proviso that no hazardous materials be used.
Yeah, and even in the last sentence, whatever we do with the sublease, we still retain all of the power to do whatever else we want to do with the sublease. So I move that we approve the lease.
Well, this is first reading.
First reading.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We'll look back.
Oh yeah.
You want to go to dinner?
Yeah.
I have one more question on that. There were two three-year extensions?
Three
three-year extensions on that. Okay.
For total extension of
12. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, that's another issue. We had another marine trade come in and talk to us about a month ago now. Very concerned about sea level rise and their long-term existence. At 2 feet above sea level, but they're desirous of a longer-term lease to secure their business and their future work and everything. And you know, I recommended to them that, you know, we're very flexible. You know, if you're not comfortable signing a 25-year lease or something of that nature, you know, maybe you break it up like this and do a smaller, you know, do a 5-year with options, you know, two or three 5-year options beyond that. That way, if things are getting to the point where you're not comfortable anymore, you just don't renew the next option. You know, use it up. So that's just something to think about. I think you're going to see more and more of our waterfront businesses thinking that way as the years go by.
Especially after the sea level rise workshop we're going to have,
I'll try to be fully silent with that if I can.
All right, so B, Port Townsend Brewing Company.
Eric again. Pretty much the same drill, again, standard form leads in this one. It's really, I think, abundantly clear that we're dealing with the only hazardous material on site is barley soda. Which if consumed in quantity can cause sickness.
Not that we've all tried.
Yeah, I think, you know, that what we have done with this one, though, is really clarify the lease premises, which I think are really unclear heretofore. So it's really clear in this that they are leasing four distinct areas. Number one, there is a small storage area in the northeasternmost portion of the old lumber yard. Immediately adjacent and to the east of that, they're also formally leasing the beer garden, which is clearly described now. The main building, the 3,000 square foot structure on the north side of the street, and then half of the building, again, for their operations and storage on the south side of the street. So their lease rate reflects kind of this combination of ground lease as well as building lease areas. I think, again, because we're using our updated lease, it's a much better document than the present that as was the case. Again, just to be about a clear know how to discuss it with the
I just saw this brief looking through real quick. It's protected 1 May, but we're not going to approve this till May 9th.
Yeah. We'll have to change that thinking.
So now, in the past, they've had parking spaces taken up with material. I can't remember if they have big tanks out there in parking spots now or not, do they?
I think most of their storage is, their storage is in that northeast corner of the lumber yard. They do have kind of informal parking spaces along the south side of the main building, but my understanding is that that has always been not specifically leased area, but rather carnival parking.
I think what Steve did two, three years ago, they
had those big tanks outside, yeah.
Well, they put up their silo for the grain outside their main building. Although it's where the parking spaces were, there was enough room to still put the parking, the car just had to move out from the building. But the other space that I remember we had some discussion about was across the way in a small building where they were storing their
beer kegs.
The beer kegs. Mm-hmm. And we did agree to rent them a footprint. They put up a fence around that.
So that then is included in this.
That's included in this.
Correct.
I guess another concern I have is that if parking is a little bit tight around the port, and if everyone puts like tables and umbrellas and stuff in their parking spots, then they end up taking up other people's parking. And if they're going to use that, cafe for table, cafe type sidewalk stuff, that should be not considered a parking spot.
Again, what we tried to do here, and it was our goal, was to capture within the description of the leased premises all the areas that they actually occupy. So, that's why I think the beer garden is described with some specificity, and we would probably go in. One of the things that we could do is come in with just a simple aerial view, from Google Earth to kind of augment the premises description here. Obviously, we don't really wish to engage park surveying to do a formal Google survey here.
This is probably one of the more extreme leases, say, over the years. They grew rapidly their business.
Yeah.
And so all these little chunks, we kept agreeing to, but now that the lease has to be renewed, it gives us a chance to codify all that and do away with all the amendments and uncertainties.
So the beer garden going for about the same rate as what the desirable or the long-term storage is or something like that? How did you determine how to charge for the square foot?
It's really unusable land for us.
I'd have to go back and look at the calculations. I thought it was at the basic yard rate.
So I don't want to be the spoiler, but how come Gwendolyn is required to pay the same insurance that the brewery is? And it seems like our exposure is a lot greater with the brewery. I mean, we're serving alcoholic beverages and sending people out in their cars, and they're doing it on port property. So my the comparison is, I understand it's policy as far as what these limits are. It just seems light compared, just considering what they're doing in terms of the beer garden.
Yeah, I don't know if Carolyn has an opinion on that issue or not, but it's not something that we specifically discussed with the law.
The $1 million internal liability is kind of our standard for all leases, where the public is coming and going, or customers, kind of the trip and fall.
And there's a fair amount of dangerous, activity that occurs in the industrial area at the port that has, again, previously been, we feel adequately addressed with these insurance limits.
So someone goes out in the intersection at Safeway, T-bones a carload of people, and there's a lawsuit over that, and it comes
through the brewery plus us, saying, well, you're allowed to operate on your property, so...
And they were legally intoxicated. What's our exposure? Right. Yeah.
Now, there's been talk...
The board keeps paying that additional charge.
So we've talked at the CPA before, under the property management, some of the seminars, that 1 million seems is kind of the industry standard, you know, for Port Angeles, you know, for the Shelton, Port Edmonds, you know, we all kind of share the same lease language. But there's, last year or so, we can talk that maybe 2 million, you know, just because over time, inflation, everything, you know, maybe 2 million is the right number.
And the cost differentials that they pay between those parts?
I think very much, whether it doubles our coverage. So.
And I know for our coverage for the court, they've recently changed it from 10 million to 10 million. So.
Indoors.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a really good question, and it raises an issue that at least has been a matter of discussion informally at the staff level, which is, you know, wanting perhaps in the future, in the not-too-distant future, to have some basic leasing policy that puts some kind of, you know, parameters on the exercise of staff discretion and kind of formulating these leases before we bring them to you. So, commission has particular concerns that, I mean, there are some great examples out there. I think Portland would be one of them, but I would be some policies there that we might address a concern like the one you raised within that. But that's, we have other issues to address in the near term.
And in addition to your identification, just checking into this, and the tenant
but still to prevent somebody from doing a lawsuit and not still having to, you know, defend themselves and all that.
Yeah,
it might be good with a new executive director coming on. That would be one of the policy things that is kind of relooked. And, you know, the whole, there's just a whole thing on understanding leases.
Yeah, with that, we all probably have a handful of leases that are likely to come forward following these two. After this, I think we're going to be set for time for a few leases coming up for renewal. So might be an opportune time to seize that period for the one that we renew the commission.
So we'll bring that back on the 9th as well for second reading.
Okay. You guys have any good?
Yeah, I was just pointing out it as just what, is there an industry standard for other establishments that serve alcohol that they, for whatever amount of liability insurance they cover? I mean, what's the Hilltop? What do they have?
There's some other ones I've participated in, but, yeah, I know there's quite a few for. I know Port of Bellingham has a brewery and several restaurants with full liquor bars, Anthony's, you know. I know the port director at the Port of Kennewick has a brewery directly under his office.
That's good.
Wine establishments in Wawa. I'm just wondering if there's some sort of standard.
We can probably do a little research.
If there is, that's probably what it should be.
It's fluctuating. I mean, you know, as a tour company, the more, if we haul more people, we're being asked to carry higher and higher and higher people.
And that would be a good question to Don Scamini at the public board thing, because one of the breakout sessions is on property management and everything. And all of the directors and the commissioners will be there. So.
Okay. You good? You're good?
On what?
On the, these two?
Yeah.
Potential immediate action item, point number 7, organizational chart.
And we talked this before, you know, with this, with the gym suddenly leaving and with my pending departure, trying to keep the ship of faith moving forward. I'm recommending that we modify the organizational chart, and per our policy, the commission approves the org chart, and then the executive director goes about, you know, doing the job descriptions and setting the salaries based on that organizational chart. So, you notice the two big changes. One is no deputy director block anymore. The maintenance yard and morgue will report directly to me. This will all be effective by 1 May. And then Eric's position, which has been essentially planning and part-time, he would come on full-time and be planning properties and environmental. That would fall under Eric directly for rating and that sort of thing. And I think this is a good organization to see the forward for, you know, essentially the rest of this year, and allow the new executive director to get on board, and after, you know, 6 months, 8 months, whatever, you know, it's that director will, you know, needs to be a change, or they feel the deputy position needs to come back, whatever. You can have that discussion. I also think for the new executive director, having the maintenance, the yard, and the morgue reporting directly to them will get them up to speed a lot quicker on those operations. And the other thing, the fortunate thing is those three divisions all have very senior supervisors. You know, they've all been here 15, 20 years, so it's, you know, the ship's going to keep moving anyway. You know, fighter bus. So anyway, I'd like to have you approve that tonight so that I can get on with the job descriptions for Eric, and really that's the only job description, is rewriting his and setting his salary.
Okay, so I'd move that we take a vote on approving your chart. All in favor? That's what I was doing, with the unanimous
right
to do that tonight.
Yep. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We did it.
That was just the motion that happened.
So do we have any discussion on this before we
move? I'm happy with it.
Yeah. I'm happy with it.
So am I.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I make a motion that we accept it as it is.
Yeah. Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. I'll get on it. And again, you know, 6 to 8 months, you can relook at the outcome of the executive director and the changes.
Other business, boatyard permit.
I gave you a pretty lengthy update last time. Just to bring you up to date, I did go to the public hearing at the Department of Ecology last Wednesday. There was about 20 people there. About 15 of them were Department of Ecology people. There was Jerry O'Keefe from WPPA, the head of the environmental section for WPPA, and he and I both provided public comment. There was a couple of consultants there, Hart Krauser was there, and everything just to listen. There are two other boatyard people, I'm not sure which ones, they just recognized them as boatyard people, they didn't speak. The third person that provided the formal comment was a representative from the Puget Sound Keepers Line. And I would say it was a rather heartless, you know, insensitive, if do-it-yourselfers can't be controlled, then maybe we shouldn't allow that anywhere. You know, that sort of comment on the record.
That was coming from who?
Puget Sound Keepers Line.
Oh, okay.
And, which we would expect. So I brought up the main two things I brought up were the really nebulous language in one section about any significant, and that's the word they use, work that goes on within the confines of stormwater catchment, which is our entire yard, Bohagan, that we have to notify Department of Ecology 60 days really mean. We have a lot of independent non-governmental entities that we have pretended that if they want to build a new building, does that mean I have to now get DOE approval? What does the 60-day notice do? If they've got all their proper permits from the city, the county, Corps of Engineers, whoever's involved in that permit, are you saying that now you have the ability to stop work until you take a look at it? Because it just says that we'll notify. I made that comment. And the other one was on that new paragraph about do-it-yourself and independent contractors, that we have to control their activities, and if need be, exclude them from the yard, if that's the only solution. So I told them about, being the largest public yard in the state, and that, the significance of all the jobs that are provided and the culture, the working waterfront and all that. And the DOE people, I got an email from Jerry O'Keefe, he heard back that they took that to heart and they're going to change that paragraph. So I'd like to think, we got that through. And that's why, the new executive director's got to attend these things and be at the table when these things come up. Otherwise, you'll be in reaction mode the rest of your life. And this is where we had a chance to modify it. So the other thing that MMTA and WPPA are going to bring up is this mixing zone that is going from a dilution factor 20 down to 5, near the outfall. Even if you're meeting your benchmarks in your stormwater outfall, if you're not meeting the dilution factor, you can still be held in violation of the permit. So the problem is, once you're in the bay, once you're in the marina, there's so many variables that pollution could be coming from elsewhere, and you have no control over that. So they're fighting that, and the next step is on Friday is the due date for any written comments. So I'm going to write a short letter reemphasizing what I did at the public hearing, but also just showing support for MMTA and WPPA on their comments. And I can leave this with you. This came in from MMTA today on their comments, so 9 pages long. So that's about the update on that. I suppose, I imagine that the conference is convening this to be a topic that would be brief.
So you didn't have any comeback on the 60-day thing?
No. And like I told him, I said, I write regulations too, and when you write regulations, you've got to be able to put yourself in the shoes of the person that's got to enforce this and carry it out. Yeah, when you write nebulous language like that, what do you expect me to do? What's significant? Do I get to determine significance? Repaving Boat Street? Is that significant to me?
Even a sandblasting operation.
When we get the YTB tugs in from the Navy, is that a significant project? I can now notify you. It says notify. It doesn't say DOE will approve or disapprove. So what does it mean? That's all.
Wayne Hudson.
We got the scope of work, and it's in the packet from Coast and Harbor. This came out of your direction that you'd like to look at what are the possibilities of doing a quote-unquote band-aid for the breakwater and kind of defer the ultimate replacement into the out years, 10, 12, 15 years, because of the money issue and knowing that we're probably going to have to do some significant investments in stormwater infrastructure in the next 3 to 5 years. So this is their scope, and it's $11,800, which is within my spending authority, and I'm ready to sign this and get Coast and Harbor on with it. But I just want to, one more time, make sure you want to go down this road, because there's some other impacts. And next meeting, we'll be bringing in a new contract for C-Run Consulting to, carry on more permitting for the breakwater with the new changes from the Corps of Engineers and the dioxin thing that we briefed you about and disposal, and now the tribes have raised the eelgrass issue. We've got to redelineate any eelgrass beds in and around the breakwater.
this could cause additional permitting changes, depending on what those options are, and if you follow through with that. Also, and we're going to, Eric and I are going to talk to RCO, we're kind of concerned, we got the $1.1 million federal grant based on a replacement project. If we don't replace the breakwater, are we jeopardizing that $1.1 million? So, in our effort to save money, we may end up, you know, spending just as much because we'll lose the $1.1 million federal dollars. We don't know that for sure, but feel free to chime in.
What's the timing on that answer from RCO? Like,
well, we haven't talked to them yet.
No, but like, are you guys thinking like in the next 10 days before the next meeting we kind of know?
Yeah, I mean, informally. Yeah, we don't want to do anything formal, and I wouldn't suggest we do anything formal until we hear back from Coastal Harbor, you know, if it's even possible to do something.
I think we would hope to talk with probably Carl Jacobs is where we would start, who is our new grant manager down there. And maybe also Marla Farbury, you know, to just
keep the head of
Marbury Austin, the head of the RCO, to really talk through the issue. Is there, you know, if we hear at least provisionally from Coastal Harbor that there is a way to downscope the project significantly and still, you know, still have a viable breakwater for a good long while, and then is there a path forward that would allow us to do this within the terms of our federal grant agreement?
And one of the other options that might be is that, and again, have to talk it over with Coastal Harbor, maybe we go ahead and do a full replacement of just the south breakwater, which is the larger, more protective barrier. And just hope that the North Breakwater holds. But if you remember back to Coastal Harbor briefing, their new design with the wave reflection, the two breakwaters working in tandem, you know, the angles, et cetera, to reduce the wave action inside the marina. So, also in the scope, you'll notice, and I asked for this, is that we have a sit-down over at their office, and we can just walk on the Edmonds Ferry. There's a couple blocks from the ferry terminal. I'd like one of you to go with the staff, you know, once they're ready to make the presentation. And then, once we get through that, then they'll come over here and do a full public presentation to the entire commission. It'd be nice to have one of you, you know, at least there, and, you know.
Yep.
The commission side of it.
So they, you just sound clear, they've indicated that the cost for the, to look at it again is $11,800.
To give the deliverable that's outlined in that scope.
Right. But then they said they conferred that they didn't know if there's anything they can do until.
I mean, they haven't said that. That'll be the outcome of this.
Mm-hmm.
Either no, we can't do anything, you need to replace it, it's not worth the risk, or here's an option, two options, three options.
Yeah. And, you know, just to cast your mind back to how we, you know, started down this path several years ago, I mean, the initial question was simply conduct a condition assessment of this facility and give us your professional opinion. That's a different question than we're asking now, which is if you were financially constrained, if you couldn't do what has been at least conceptually designed, because it was cost prohibitive, is there a way to undertake this project and still protect the marina? So it's a slightly different question.
It's like buying one of these old Victorian homes in town and want to totally restore it. And the builder says, well, give me $1 million and I'll totally restore it. And I said, well, all I got is $200,000. What can you do? And I'll redo the foundation, the roof, and keep it moving, you know, standing upright.
We're in the same spot the commission was in 40 years ago.
Well, I'm always very cognizant of, you know, what are the commission and executive director going to be thinking 10, 15 years from now, of, you know, what in the heck did those guys do back in 2016? Now it's cost them $8 million to replace it. You know, so.
The and we've talked about this, but just so we're clear, this, as they go through this, all we're doing is looking at this. This is, there's no decision being made.
They will come back over for another site visit.
Right.
You can see, they want our floor code to be available for the, to open tap on filings and kind of redo that basic assessment that they did, and so they're comfortable in their mind that they're gonna give us, you know, something useful. But if you're comfortable with the, like I said, it's within my spending limit, so I wanted to get your sense, are you comfortable with me signing this and moving ahead with it?
It's $1,200, $12,000 that if they say, yeah, there's something else we can do, it still could jeopardize our grant funding because it changes significantly enough that it might not be eligible for the $1.1 million.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
So you can find out on next week.
Yeah, but I think we could, at least preliminarily have that question answered with a, conversation with RCO before Preston Harbor commences work on the project.
Remember, this is federal money. RCO is a state organization, but there's a pass-through for that money.
For big,
Right, so they may be hesitant to give us in writing their definitive, but I'm sure they've run up against this over the years with other municipalities and projects. And
it's kind of, it's a tough one too with the new commit, with the new ED coming on. You don't want to have him or her cemented into a path that they're going to be stuck with.
You're the one that's responsible.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here, asking if you're comfortable with it. With the tape recorder going.
Yeah, I'm comfortable.
The new ED will just go back to April 27th, 2016. That's doing what the commissioner is set to do.
Yeah.
That's why you guys get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, the big bucks. How about you, Mr. Tucker?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it seems like it. I don't know.
I didn't mean to put that much doubt in your mind. I'd go ahead and do it.
Then you know what your options are.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that we're going to go that route, but at least.
Right.
I don't see any point in reiterating everything I said about it last time. You know, I feel pretty strongly that we need to do it to have a look at this, and certainly it's not going to jeopardize any grant money. And if it did, then we would act accordingly. So. Yeah.
And the permits, you know, there's a good chance we'll have all the permits done this summer, by August or so, and by Labor Day, and the permits are good for 5 years. So even if we do something with one breakwater but not the other, you know, we can come back 4 years from now or something and do it. Okay.
Like going to the dry cleaners. Oh yeah, another $12,000 for your pants.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's all I got. I need to do a motion.
All right.
I just want to put the guilt strip on.
Make it work. Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Okay. Staff comments.
I just want to mention, based on what was in the consent agenda about the resolution to increase the auditor's revolving fund, the purpose of that is so that we can strengthen our cash handling controls. We're adding a drawer at each location at the Morris and then also out at Frank Hudson so that each customer service rep has a personal cash drawer.
Those are the ones backed up and gone.
So they'll be accountable for that drawer. And I went through with Jean and Tammy and TJ, and we all kind of round robin on updating the cash handling policy and making sure it was tight and clear for everybody because there's going to be training for the state and employees.
You know, that kind of dovetails into the last safety meeting we were talking about workplace violence and so on, and where there was five different employees, I guess, that were, you know, because there was a suggestion page there, and it was five different people asked for some specific training, and those people get robbed. And so I think it would be good at some point to move forward with that. So they have a little bit of training on how to deal with, you know, the event that you got a bad actor coming at you and wants the cash in the door.
Yeah, and well, along those lines too, after we had that meeting, I looked at what Endurus offers as a provider, and they have a de-escalation course for people to learn how to handle the customers that are, you know, violent or potentially violent. And so adding Jason from the yard to that presentation, it's a 4-hour training. And then if you would go and then come back and train for the
Train the trainer.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
So that's along those
lines. You know, the interesting thing is, we checked the city police for a server. They haven't had any training. I just think all the people should have that sort of training.
What? The city police don't have any training? That's bizarre.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had a meeting with the three of us and Al the other day to talk about that. And if, you know, try the Jason thing, if that, you know, need more, then we'll throw up a bit more. So.
Mm-hmm. As long as Al ever had to de-escalate, anybody's told him to stop doing something bad?
A little bit. A couple of times.
Yeah.
All of us, Terry, me, everyone of us has been in that situation out there in the yard where, you know, and they all tend to be 6'5" on the line. Food, right?
Just a brief update on the full boatyard stormwater feasibility study. We've developed a short list of four firms to interview, and those interviews will be conducted on Friday, this coming Friday, two, and then another two on Monday. So we would hope to have a decision sometime next week and be able to report back to you by May 9 who the selected firm is, at least with the hope that we'll be at least moving down the path towards contract negotiations at that point in time. They're all of the submittals that the court received were from firms that were really highly qualified, kind of the usual suspects that we would expect to see making presentations at statewide stormwater conferences. And certainly the shortlisted firms are in that category, so we feel really confident that we're going to get a team that will be tremendous help to the board in helping us address these issues.
And remember, this is an RFQ, a qualification proposal, so there's no money. It's just, are they capable of doing the job? And once we will rank them 1 through 4, and should we not be able to reach agreement on a contract and a price with the first one,
go to the second
one. You know, we deserve the right to say thank you and go to the second one. So, but we'll have to all bring back. It'll certainly be about my pay grades. The only thing I have is I will not be attending the North Olympic Development Council tomorrow. I've got a person coming in at that time, one of your candidates that wants to talk about the port and everything. So I'll be doing that. And you'll be tied up.
Interviewing. I won't be there either, so it's going to be representative list.
Commission or public comments? Yes, Carol.
Well, we've had since 2011 to get in line with the DOE's benchmarks, right? That's when they first instituted the money for the money for zinc, for instance. So we've dragged our feet, basically. We've had a lot of time to figure out how to make it work and to come into compliance with them. Now we've got Mr. Clark sitting here saying, gee, they're so mean to us. And I don't think that's correct. And talking about how the wording is vague and nebulous, I think their intention is very clear. If we look at page 16 on the new stormwater permit, it's very clear to me that anything they actually said, anything that's going to affect our benchmarks, give us 60 days notice. We should somehow be able to make that judgment. It's not a random, arbitrary thing. And neither are the benchmarks themselves. 90 parts per million doesn't sound like much. But it takes a lot less than that to affect the health of the salmon. They've done their homework. Anybody that's gone on their website and studied it knows that they know what they're talking about. It's not arbitrary. And instead of saying, oh gee, we're just going to have to eliminate the do-it-yourselfers, too bad, why not offer them full encapsulation? See, we're going to do full encapsulation and keep a hold on that part of the market which nobody else has. Karen and I have been all up and down the coast. There's one other boat yard where people can work on their own boats. That's over in Oahu. It's not nearly the size of this. They've got a small travel lift. Looks like our small one.
I can interrupt you and say that's not true. Edmonds, you can work on your own boat in Edmonds. You can do that in Everett. So there are other yards that offer work on your own boat.
Okay. Well, I've heard it said that this is the only one in Washington.
Right.
We're the largest.
We're the largest.
Okay. So we've got a potential market there, and I don't think it's right to offer them the elimination of do-it-yourselfers when we could keep that option open. And for those people who can pay for it and want to work on their own boat, people with yachts, I look at the Brian Toms, these people are out there. They have yachts that are worth more than any house they've ever lived in. They're willing to pay for that kind of thing. Why just eliminate that? That doesn't seem right. Why not offer the DOE full encapsulation? Say, this is going to be our new rule. We're going to see if it works. And we've had 5 years to get into line with this. And basically, it just sounds like if you're saying that the do-it-yourselfers can't police themselves, you get rid of them. And I think that's your idea there. I don't think that's the DOE's idea, because this has been a trend with you for a long time.
Carol, I'm going to ask that you not make it personal. I'm going to give you one more minute. You've already had 3 minutes, so wrap up your comments, please.
All right, well, there are other alternatives. Besides ruling that out and having the DOE write it into the permit that we can't have do it for self-earnings, why not leave our option tomorrow and say if we're going to have do-it-yourselfers, they're going to have full encapsulation, we're going to see how this works. More than that, instead, we've had a long time for coming to compliance with this. It's not something that just popped up. So rather than saying, gee, we couldn't do anything about it, provide a solution where we don't have to eliminate that part of the market.
Thanks, Carol. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Commissioner comments?
Okay. Well, stormwater issues, and since now I'm sitting at the table here, we've got the new director of environmental planning and properties.
I'm not under contract yet.
As far as I'm concerned, you are.
However, I did take him down to show him the potential oil spill at that point.
It's my understanding that having some difficulties in regards to the heavy haul out washdown, and specifically in regards to keeping all the wash water onto the pad and going into the sump as opposed to getting into the gravel. What are we going to do about it?
We met off the field, four of us along with Al. We're going to start a weekly sit-down, Eric, you know, talking to all the participants, depending on the issue. That's one issue. There's other issues. You know, whether it's strictly Al, whether it's Al and Terry, whether it's Al, Terry, and Larry, Ozzy, you know, and just say, okay, here's what we're seeing, you know, how can we tackle this thing and fix it, you know, as a group solution instead of, well, he's not doing this and she's not doing that type thing. So trying to
get some teamwork going.
Exactly. And we may institute this for at least initially as a weekly sit down. You know, we might do it after our Tuesday staff meeting,
things are going good, then we go every other week or, you know, that sort of thing. So
we're really looking for kind of, you know, collective input and a solution that everybody kind of understands and supports and will, so you're right, we're looking for...
And who's responsible for doing what in this?
So I think, you know, Al is our environmental compliance officer, is doing a great job out there in terms of helping us identify, you know, potential problem issues, but I think to find solutions that are workable, we need to involve the wider team, in particular Terry. So we hope to have our first meeting next week and begin to move through some of these issues and make some headway.
So in the meantime, though, operations are continuing. Is there something that can be done on a temporary basis to stop this particular thing from happening?
Yeah, my understanding is that there have been some measures taken, but the windscreen and then the rope, I think, was placed on the washdown pad as well, as a means of trying to ensure that the water that was on the pad was going into the sump and not washing off into the gravel. But I know the windscreen has been problematic. But it's a step, but it's insufficient. In direct answer to your question, there are steps that have been taken, but I think we would acknowledge...
Yeah, we haven't been consistent.
Yeah.
They're going to do it every time. You do a washdown, not every other one or something like that.
So, mm-hmm.
Give everybody a chance to be nice.
Yeah.
How about...
And there's some other things. We got a little bit of clarity, at least with Al. There are things where he directly, he sees something, the violation. It's not always the yard guy or maintenance or somebody that needs to fix it. He needs to step in there and confront the individual. In this case, there's one ongoing one with one of our lease tenants. One of the nice things about this new organization, since Eric is our property, our lease guy, is that when you're dealing with a lease tenant, well, if Al told the guy and a week later the individual's still in violation, then it's time to go to the property guy and say, hey, one of your tenants, you know, because we've got some very specific language in our lease. And that goes into a whole new realm of enforcement, where Eric and I, the new ED, would get involved and say, okay, sign this document.
So I think we're going to try to, a twofold approach to really clarify kind of authority and responsibility and who's doing what, and then hopefully have kind of some team problem solving and identify some solutions that are supported by everyone and move forward with those, and then we'll benchmark those.
It's a tough spot.
I've used it. I've done washdowns.
It's the wrong place to put a washdown.
I know the wind howls right through there.
But where else are you going to put it? Near by the water.
I know.
But it's problematic when the wind isn't really blowing.
That's true.
Yeah. But in the meantime, they're at least trying with some sort of a temporary berm.
Right, inexpensive. And it could be maybe do a little more permanent fix, maybe an actual concrete curb, the length of the pad, something like that. But we allow the boat crew to do the washdown, or the boat owner, depending on which pad it is. We don't have enough staff to have somebody stand there for 2 hours watching the crew wash down the boat, because especially this time of year, our staff is hauling next, doing something else somewhere in the yard. Get to a point where we take over that duty and charge the boat owner.
Or we get the bigger tenants to take over the duty. Request that they have a rep on site when the boat's being done.
Yeah, if the co-op is bringing a boat in, then...
Right.
They have somebody standing there.
Well, until this is rectified, perhaps we need to have staff present until this is, situation is resolved. One staff broke somebody that's, you know, keeps an eye on them, you know, maybe not standing there, you know, and staring at them for 2 hours straight, but coming back and then visiting on a regular basis every 15 minutes or so to make sure nothing's wrong.
They would have the meeting. Mm-hmm. I'm sure okay. The staff will have some great suggestions too. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's all I have.
Okay. I have nothing. All right, so we are going to agenda, before we do, so the next public workshop special meeting, let's see, what are we doing here? Towards the...
The whole series.
Yeah, all right, so these are the next meetings that are coming up because of the executive director selection. Thursday, April 28th, starting tomorrow at 8:30, we will have a special commission meeting. And then on Friday, again,
executive session.
These are all executive sessions. This is where we're actually interviewing the candidates. Friday, April 29th, we'll have a special commission meeting, executive session starting at 8:30. Monday, May 2nd, we will have a special commission meeting starting at 9:30 a.m. And these are all related to executive director selection. And the next public workshop will be May 9th, and special meeting will be May 9th because of the Skamania conference coming up, and that's on a Monday. And that'll, so the public workshop will be at 9:30, and the commission meeting will be at 1 p.m.
We might want to add, although it's not set to be a special meeting, because you're not making any decisions, there will be a public forum.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
9 to 12 on Friday, May 6th, with a panel of interviewers interviewing the final selectee, the two or three.
This is a week from Friday.
Right. And with the commission just listening in, and the public, it's open to the public, but the public is only there to listen as well. Be moderated, and just for the five panel members to have questions. And then the next Monday, which is your regular meeting,
we'll actually make a selection.
Hopefully you'll be comfortable and ready to make the final selection and announce it.
And with that, we're going to adjourn into our executive session for 60 minutes.
60 minutes to do legal, real estate, and
BD work.
And personnel qualifications.
For approximately an hour.
No decision.